Are you ready for the conscience of psychiatry? For the best-selling author of Talking Back to Prozac, Medication Madness, and now Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, it's the Dr. Peter Bregan Hour with guests unafraid to speak the truth about psychiatry and psychology and about how you can make the most of your own life.
And this is Peter Bregan, post-Memorial Day. This weekend I was on Fox News with Douglas Kennedy talking about the abuse of prescription of drugs on the military. The show is repeated and is going to be a part of a series. It's a big breakthrough to finally have a major media outlet talking about what's happening in our military with 30% or more of soldiers on active duty are getting medicated. Used to be, not long ago, used to be that you couldn't go into combat if you had psychiatric drugs. Now, I've gotten reports in areas where up to 50% of the young men and women fighting our wars are on psychiatric drugs, drugs that cause disinhibition, drugs that we know encourage violence and suicide. At the same time, of course, we've been getting the escalating suicide rates, which parallel the increase in medication. I'm really glad to have had the opportunity to be on Fox, and I'm just hoping that we're going to get more and more attention to this. One of the most interesting questions that really would need a lot of investigation in the future is how did the military in a few short years get transformed from a drug-free zone to a high rate of drugging? That doesn't happen by chance. That's not a coincidence. That's not something that just happens. That's drug companies finding a way to reach people at the top and to open up a huge new market practically overnight. Well, I'll have the link to the Douglas Kennedy show, the Doug Kennedy show on that was at first aired over Memorial Day. I'll get it up on my website pretty soon on Bregan.com. My guest today is a little different. Well, she's a different person in being a very brave human being and a very interesting person. And the areas we're going to cover are a little different. I think areas of very, very broad interest. My guest is Mary Stoddard. Stoddard is S-T-O-D-D-A-R-D, Mary Nash Stoddard. Mary has a background that spans being a medical expert in issues surrounding sweeteners and their harmful effects. She's been a judge. She's lectured in medical schools, which is amazing, given her perspective, and not being a medical doctor. And she's had a big impact, not as big as she would like. None of us ever have as big an impact as we would like to have. But she's really been doing a great deal to warn folks about the dangers of the artificial sweeteners, which ones I'll let her begin to tell us about. One of our shared overlapping experiences is the FDA. And that's going to be interesting as well to talk about. Mary, are you there?
I'm here, Peter. I'm listening, and congratulations, by the way, for taking that issue mainstream with Fox.
Yeah, I hadn't even realized that I was the first to do that until I sent out the information to a number of people who've been working in this area more intensely than I have been over a number of years now. And they said, whoopee, this is the first time. And
good
yeah,
for you.
Good news.
Good for you.
Well, yeah. It doesn't start with me, of course. It took the Fox News people to do this.
And
I was one of the people they used. They had some other folks who've been fighting these issues in a very personal way for a long time.
I know the feeling.
Did I say enough about you to introduce you?
Oh, my goodness. I'm blushing. Can you tell? Yes, you did, Peter. Thank you so much.
Well, why don't you just say a little more about who you are and how you got into all of this. And we'll be talking about more general health issues today than usual.
Okay.
But there are also some mental health, psychiatric angles, and there's certainly the FDA. So the mic is yours for a few minutes.
Well, I'm just a little girl who grew up on the Gulf Coast of Texas in a farming community eating real food. And we didn't know at the time, I'll be 75 on Monday. That's my three-quarters of a century birthday. And
you know,
so,
you're younger than me.
Whoa. I didn't think anybody was...
Yeah, you're younger than me by a little bit, but go ahead.
Okay. So anyway... On the Gulf Coast, in this tiny little town, Eagle Lake, Texas, everybody helped everybody else, and it was a farming community. People ate right, they exercised, they did all the right things for the most part, and I never even heard the word cancer before. We knew one guy in our little town who had been gassed with mustard gas in World War I, I believe. And that was the sickest person I had ever known. And now all of a sudden, kids growing up don't know what it's like to live in a world without cancer and without almost everybody being sick and without three-quarters of the people having mental disorders of some kind or another. So anyway... That was my origin, and I believe in words. I believe in the Pledge of Allegiance when we said it as I was growing up. I believe in liberty and justice for all. I truly believe that, and justice is the key word along with liberty alongside that for me, because when something is done that isn't just and harms our children, and in fact harms the very essence of who we are, as your quote said, when you harm the brain, you harm the very expression of oneself, Peter Bregan. And I love that quote. We've been using it for years in our materials, and I truly believe that. So my beginning interest in study of neurology in the human brain began when my husband was diagnosed with a brain tumor in 1984. And unfortunately, at age 42, he succumbed to brain cancer in January of 1985. We had been through a lot. We had three children, and I was devastated, and they were too. So I thought, I need to get beyond this, and how do I do that? You know, how do I not wallow in self-pity? And I never questioned God about any of this, but I did really not feel like going on that much. And so I had my first diet soda in the cancer hospital where he lay dying the last 2 weeks of his life. And I went to the nurse's station and I said, what is this yucky stuff in the soda now? It was my only treat, was to walk down the hall and put some money in the drink machine and get a diet Dr. Pepper or Coke or whatever it was with saccharin, which I'd drunk for many years. And she said, I'll ask the supplier. She did, and she came back the next day and said, he says get used to it. That's all they're sweetening with now. And I said, okay, I'll get used to it. Joined Weight Watchers, used more and more aspartame, got more and more ill with joint aches and pains and vision problems, hearing loss, all kinds of weird foggy feeling in the brain and depression that ended up giving me suicidal thoughts. And I had never experienced this before. So I went to 6 specialists. Nobody could help me. Finally, my primary care physician said, "You think it's the diet drinks because they taste funny?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "I'll write the company," which he did. And they wrote back, the NutraSweet doctor, Harriet Butchko, said, "Oh, no, your patient couldn't be suffering from our product's effects. Nobody ever has, and nobody will." So I thought, oh, well, I'm just an oddball, huh? And then I thought, no, I'll call the FDA and see what they say, which I did, as a good reporter would. And I called the FDA, and the girl at the other end said, "Oh, aspartame, oh, NutraSweet. My gosh, I'm sitting here with a Diet Coke right now." She said, "I start every day with them, and I just couldn't live without it. And it's so beneficial, you know, for weight loss and no calories." And I thought, wait a second, I called to report an adverse reaction, and she's giving me a commercial for a product they don't even own. You know, it's an FDA supposedly job to take people's reactions. So anyway, she was turning me off so badly. I finally hung up and thought, there's something wrong with this. And I, with my doctor's blessing and the help of a friend who is a neuropharmacologist and was a researcher at the UT Southwestern Medical School in Dallas, we just haunted the medical library for weeks and months and did our research. Well, every time we looked for aspartame, it all came up, oh, it's wonderful, it's good stuff, it never hurt anybody, maybe a migraine headache. And so I thought, well, what is this? And the researcher looked at me and he said, "You know, there's something wrong with this." He said, "We're looking under the wrong words. And what are the breakdown products?" And I told him, I said, "Well, it's 50% phenylalanine, it's 40% aspartic acid, and 10% methanol, wood alcohol." And he said, "Aha, we'll look under those." When we did, Peter, the sky lit up. I think drum rolls happened and choirs of angels sang, because this was all research done prior to the 1970s, when it all got polluted with money, as you were talking about, from the drug companies. And G.D. Searle was a drug company that submitted it for approval. And so all of a sudden, here was this research showing phenylalanine could cause seizures, aspartic acid caused holes in the brains of mice. Methanol, well, good grief, you know, wood alcohol killed people during Prohibition and blinded people and was hallucinogenic, addictive, all kinds of horrible things. And that's how I started to roll with this, Peter. Honestly, it was kind of a comedy of errors, because I wasn't a scientist, but I had the help of really good people who believed. They believed me when I said, you know, I think there's something wrong with this. They knew me, and they knew I liked to research. So that's how it happened. That's how it started.
Did you ever get a chance to look at the new drug application, the NDA?
Yes.
That the drug company sent in, and do they talk about the breakdown products and evaluate them?
Yes, they said. They said you would have to. The thing that I took away from that,
you have to eat tons of these things. Yeah,
exactly. There you go. Boy, you had to drink gallons of lemonade sweetened with aspartame or Crystal Light or whatever. And my doctor looked at me and he said, all I could find at the medical school when I looked was gallons and gallons of people who abused the ingestion of it. He said, you don't do that. I said, gosh, no. And so that's what the MSDA sheets talk about, and they gloss over everything anyway. And the company still, well, they offered me, you know, even though I didn't react to their product poorly, they did offer me a two-week paid, all-expense-paid vacation for two anywhere I wanted to go in the world. And at the end, I know, it's laughable. And at the end of that fabulous two-week, just awesome vacation, I would be the lab rat that was submitted to testing just to see if I really had a reaction to their product. When my doctor looked at me and said, "You want to take them up on that?" I said, "No, it's not worth it." I said, "I'm not going to be anybody's guinea pig because I really believe that's what caused me to have all these problems and go to six specialists." And I had handled body fluids and blood from my husband who had had blood transfusions, and I even thought in my wildest imaginations that I had contracted HIV or something. I mean, it sounds so stupid now, but that was all I could think of because I hadn't done anything differently except that. And yeah, we found out that aspartame has the capability of changing DNA. Dr. Olney's report showed 10% rise in brain tumors since the advent of aspartame in 1981, for example, and I participated in the brain tumor conference. I was on the panel of five experts up there at the neurology conference in Washington, D.C. in 1997. In fact, I went straight from my lecture at the Southwestern Medical School to the doctors and this fabulous buffet they had prepared and everything for the class. I went straight from there to Washington to talk about brain tumors and how pilots are reacting to it. So anyway, it does change the DNA because Dr. Olney discovered that when the lab animals in his tests were fed just not enormous amounts, regular amounts of the sweetener, the third-generation pups were born sexually dysfunctional and morbidly obese. And isn't that what we want in the future of our kids, you know, third generation? Sexually obese and sexually dysfunctional and morbidly obese. I mean, I can barely say it. It's so horrible to think about.
Wow. You know, it's interesting. The methanol breakdown that you describe, and as you know, it goes to another step. Methanol goes to formaldehyde and formic acid.
Oh, my goodness, yes. The
phenylalanine crosses the blood-brain barrier.
Indeed, it does. And
so, I mean, this is not far-fetched, what you're saying at all.
No. It lowers the seizure threshold. And, in fact, a lot of pilots were talking about having seizures, and I found some research. Oddly, I think it was Time or Newsweek magazine was reporting on, you talked about the military, it was five Marines had been drummed out of the Marine Corps for being too aggressive, and I said, wow, how aggressive do you have to be drummed out of the Marine Corps? But when tested, the cerebral spinal fluids showed a very low concentration of serotonin. And a lot of these guys and gals in the military have reported to me that their MREs had aspartame in them, packets of Equal and Kool-Aid, sugar-free Kool-Aids and things like that. And, of course, diet drinks were readily available, and the military in the Gulf War, for example, out in the desert, those diet drinks were stored in 100-plus degree temperature. And remember, 85 degrees Fahrenheit turns it into diketopiperazine, which is a brain tumor agent, and a whole lot of other toxic byproducts and breakdown products, actually.
So it certainly should have immediately raised red flags with the FDA, which apparently it didn't. What does the data look like on actual? I mean, you've set up nicely that this thing breaks down into a number of psychoactive, potentially dangerous substances. What about the evidence that it actually is causing the harm we might anticipate?
Oh, well, by now, we have 30-something years of research and study, and every time we come out with a study that's independently done, not funded by the company or any of the researchers, or none of the researchers are funded by anybody that would give them a conflict of interest, all those studies show harm. And in fact, one psychiatrist had to shut his study down because the hospital administrator experienced, I think, eye hemorrhaging and had to spend 6 hours in surgery. Well, we all know, as you mentioned, methadone with alcohol is definitely travels to the eye and causes blindness and retina detachment and things like that. So they had to halt their test, but they were finding that people with psychiatric disorders, when they used aspartame, they were worse, and the symptoms were heightened by that, which is no surprise to me and probably you as well.
So interesting. I've always been very sensitive to any kind of drug effect, and which is a good thing. I think it has saved me from indulging drugs. I have a weakness for coffee, and I like to have a cup of coffee in the morning before I do something like, in particular, if I'm going to say testify in court. And sometimes I couldn't get a cup of coffee at a lunch break or at a break in court, but I could get a Diet Coke or a Diet Pepsi. And so I would drink one before I went on the stand. And I only did it a very few times because my bladder got terribly irritated. And I had to get off the stand a couple of times more than I wanted to.
Oh, my gosh.
So that stopped me from using them. But is that like one of the signs that, hey, look out, you may be in trouble?
Yes. It scalds the lining of the bladder. And I don't know which breakdown component does it, but people who have problems with aspartame and report them, that's one of the many problems. And
what was the word you used? What does it do to the lining of the bladder, Mary?
It scalds.
S-C-A-L-D-S, yeah, it felt like that.
Yeah, it makes it raw inside. And it also causes diuresis. You have to go more often.
I did.
Yeah, and it really is a systemic poison, Peter. It will affect every organ of the body. It causes kidney cancer. It causes lung cancer, leukemia, lymphoma. Leukemia is an interesting one because that was just proven in the last few years to be associated with aspartame. Interestingly, the FDA director, remember, Arthur Hull Hayes Jr., who used a lot of it, defended it to the death, died in 2010 of leukemia. Well, that's sad and ironic, and I don't take any joy in that whatsoever. Really, I don't. But the saddest part, of even more tragic than that, is his daughter, who was raised on it, died within 6 months of his death in 2010 of pancreatic cancer, which is another cancer of the pancreas. That showed up in testing in the very beginning in the 70s and early 80s. So I'm saying these are people who, I guess, were lab animals in human form, because they both died of something that aspartame can cause. And
how
I believe
the FDA been responding to all this?
Oh my gosh, they really don't. Now, honestly,
has there been a committee hearing on it?
I testified in 1987 at the final aspartame safety hearing. They declared it safe after that and said no more. We just shut everything off and it's safe. And the thing that's not safe, they said to us, is saccharin. Oh my gosh, they wanted saccharin banned. They wanted signs put in the 7-Eleven and the stores that sold saccharin saying, this store sells products that contain saccharin and it's a poison and blah, blah, blah. And then I found out in the, let's see, what year was it? I think it was the mid-90s. One of the FDA assistant directors went on television and said, oh my gosh, he said, saccharin is the thing we really worry about and should be worried about and concerned with. And the reporter said, how many complaints have been logged for saccharin? And he said, well, six. By that time, 10,000 complaints before they shut it all down and said, we're not taking any more complaints, had been logged for aspartame, and they did nothing. But they wanted to ban saccharin. Now, I said, you know, everybody says when the FDA approves something, you don't put the horse back in the barn. Well, they did put the horse back in the barn when it came to the silicone breast implants. They didn't recall those, obviously, but what they did was say, we're not doing it anymore, and we're calling a moratorium. And I said, why don't you do the same for aspartame? And they said, oh, no, silicone breast implants have been shown to be deadly, and aspartame hasn't. Well, you asked about television. Fox TV had us on after Dick Armey, who was, I think, the minority whip at the time, and he's from Dallas, so we knew him. And we went there and we said, Mr. Armey, we really need an investigation on this. And he said, well, you know, my wife gets headaches when she drinks it. So he believed us. And he said, well, I'm going to have my assistant set up a meeting with the FDA. And we said, oh, they're not going to meet with us. They just don't meet with anybody. We did meet with them in 1987, during the Senate hearings. We met with them after that. And, you know, Peter, they walked into the room, into the meeting of those of us who have been harmed by it and really ill, with the aspartame book under their arms. It was done by Steginck and Feiler, the aspartame researchers, and it's totally supportive of aspartame safety and ridiculously biased and anyway harmful. But that's the mindset they had. So anyway, Dick Armey fought and fought and fought to get us a meeting, and finally he did. And yes, we met with those people, and they said, you only get 1 hour with the top FDA officials, which is unprecedented. You know, they don't meet with people. And
no,
especially,
they certainly don't.
Especially people who oppose them vehemently, as
in
we
fact,
were doing.
When I happened to meet Paul Lieber, who was at the time the head of the psychiatric approval section of the FDA, and I met him at an FDA hearing, and I put my hand out. He wouldn't even shake it, let alone have a meeting with me. He said, I know who you are. I said, I'm Peter Bregan. Hi, Paul. I put out my hand, and he said, I know who you are. And in front of five people, he refused to shake my hand.
That's terrible. I mean,
of course, after he retired, he went to work for the drug companies.
Oh,
a big surprise.
Big surprise. Yeah.
He became a consultant to drug companies.
Of course. course. I mean, the FDA director became a consultant to the drug company's PR firm 3 months after he left the FDA. And, of course, Monsanto owned the drug company, G.D. Searle, in 1985, I believe they bought it. And it was a division of Monsanto. And they, I lost my train of thought. The word well, Monsanto Mary, was just scary.
You can gather your thoughts. We'll go to break in a minute or two. We can start the music anytime. One of the thoughts I'm having, Mary, is, you know, you and I are too old to be doing this, according to common lore. Should we talk a little bit about so-called aging? I've never really done that much on the radio.
Of course. Alzheimer's, memory loss, confusion.
Let's talk about that when we come back. Getting old and not getting old at the same time.
You got it.
And this is Dr. Peter Breggin, and my guest, whose name I haven't announced often enough because she's been saying such interesting things, is Mary Nash Stoddard. I thought I might shift a little bit and talk maybe a little more personally about some issues we share.
Okay.
Even more than me. You've really gone out on a limb, in a sense, because you've come at this whole issue without professional background. You've become a reformer, and you've taken on these powerful establishments, some that I've gone up against, the pharmaceutical industry, the FDA.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, I'm probably more vulnerable than you because I'm in the profession.
Yeah.
In some ways, you're more vulnerable than I because they can say, well, you have no credentials.
Exactly.
So we're an interesting mix in that regard. And the other thing that occurred to me that that kind of interrelates to all this is the age issue.
Yeah.
My local newspaper here in Ithaca had this article about these 80-year-old people who were being interviewed and who were, quote, sharp as tacks. Well, I'm nearly 80. I'm 77. I think it's insulting to think of myself as sharp as a tack. I'm as sharp as a human being can be. And just that analogy was so demeaning. You know, it's really not a very positive thing to say about somebody, but it's said all the time.
Yes,
I want to be as sharp as Peter Breggin has always been. and then my wife and I were having a lovely lunch this afternoon, and at the next table were four obviously retired men chatting, getting together for their hour or two in the day, and they mm-hmm. looked like they ranged from 55 to 70.
Uh-huh.
And here I am sitting with my marvelous, vibrant wife who's in her early 60s, and me in my late 70s, and we're just busy talking about the world and impacting on the world and what's going on in the world and
what's
our next move. And so are you getting old, Mary?
Oh, are you kidding? No, I'll never. Somebody said I'm the youngest sounding and acting grandmother they know. So that was good enough for me. I keep up pretty well with all the facts and figures that I have when I come on a show like yours, because I know people expect sharp figures and data, statistics, you know, all the things that have happened in the last 30 years and the history, the dates, the people involved and everything. I try to remember that. In fact, I tell people in my old age I've become aspartame savant, and I really feel like I'm focused on that, and it keeps me young. And the grandkids keep me young, and my way of living keeps me young now. I didn't used to eat this well. I eat all organic now, almost vegetarian. And I do take care of myself. I don't smoke or drink or take drugs. I take thyroid, have for forever almost, a tiny bit. every morning, and that's it. And I've never been hospitalized. I've never had surgery or anything like that that other people have had. And I look at people, Peter, like Jane Fonda and Raquel Welch, who kind of started out with me in the 1960s here in Dallas. And people like that, oh, even Sophia Loren is so gorgeous, even at her age. And I think, wow, there's hope for me, even though they probably had work done and I haven't.
I suspect they've had a lot of work done.
I would if I could afford it, let me just say. But I feel good. I have, you know, people still want me to come and speak to their groups. And I lost 40-something pounds 4 or 5 years ago and have kept it off. And I never felt better, really.
How'd you lose the weight?
I lost
you
it. Well, I went. No, I went to the gym, but I was addicted to sugar. I was addicted all my life, I guess, to sweet things, sweet taste, which is getting people in trouble. No matter what it's from, if it's from artificial sweetener or sugar, you know, if you have something that's too sweet, it's addicting. And so I said, no more desserts when I go to a birthday party, no birthday cake or ice cream for me, because I'm an addict. I can't just eat one little scoop of ice cream. I like two or three. So I eliminated that from my life, first of all. I decided to learn how to drink coffee and tea unsweetened with nothing in it. And everybody says, oh, that's yucky. We don't like that. And I said, you think I liked it at first? But it was important to me. And if it's a priority, then you'll do it and you'll like it. And that's what I did. A lot of other changes. I don't, oh, gosh, the pork association's going to come after me now. I stopped eating, you know, sausage and bacon and stuff like that. And very little red meat, almost none. I eat fish and some chicken, but lots and lots of veggies. I'm just a real happy camper with vegetables, and I don't fry things. So it's a conscious, concentrated effort. I never eat fast food. I may have a burger from one of my favorite burger places twice a year, and that's it. I just don't let myself do those things, and I think it's worth it, and it worked for me. It's not a diet. It's a way of life, truly.
Yeah. And I'm sure you feel needed. I'm sure you feel from day to day that you're a very special voice and that your head's full of, you know, what am I going to do and how am I going to say it?
What's my next move? Absolutely. It's a reason for me to stay strong and to stay healthy and to impart my knowledge that I've worked so hard to come by over 3 decades to other people, because they need it too. And other people don't have the time that it took me to work and work and work on this and study and get it all down. And so I feel like I'm the conduit, and I have to stay strong and healthy to be a good example, for one thing. And I love life. Life is good. And I have a strong faith, and I pray and meditate. And before every interview, I pray really hard that this will be my best interview ever. And I hope it is. I hope it has been.
Oh, this has been a very good interview. And now it's good in a whole new way, just talking about these issues. I think this whole concept of retirement and reaching a point where you can't do really productive things anymore, I think it's a huge mistake. Listening to somebody the other day who said there's no word for retirement in the Bible or in the original Hebrew.
I love that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's true or not, but I like it a lot, too.
Oh, well, I don't recall. And, in fact, I retweeted something yesterday. I'm Mary Stodd on Twitter, by the way. Everybody follow my tweets, and we'll have fun. But
what's the best way to get in touch with you? Was it tweeting?
Well, yeah, tweeting is good, and I have a blog, Stoddard's POV, stoddardspointofview.com, or at blogspot.com, something like that. And my email is Mary Stodd, MaryStodd, at airmail.net. So there are any number of ways people can Google my name and find out how to get hold of me. But, I feel like it's real important to stay on top of things and stay not retired. In fact, the tweet that I sent out was the one that T. Boone Pickens had put on the internet. He was 85 yesterday, and he said he will never retire. And when you hear this man on interviews, my gosh, he is so on top of things and on top of his game, and he imparts such wisdom when he talks, and I like that a lot. And I think you're that way, too, in your field. So I like to surround myself with people who are like-minded with me in loving life and thinking that it's worthwhile and happy to be here. You know, every morning I wake up and I say, I'm just so happy to be here. And I know a lot of my peers and colleagues from broadcasting are no longer here. I look around and I say, oh my gosh, I may want to write a story on broadcasting someday. Who can I interview? And there's nobody left. You know, I was in broadcasting for, well, off and on, because I do interviews now and had talk shows and all, for 60 years. I got into broadcasting in high school in 1954. And so, you know, it's just retirement is not in my vocabulary. Making money is, but I can't make any because, you know, I'm too busy volunteering and doing stupid stuff. That other people are out really working on their careers and selling stuff and making money, and I'm not, but I'm so happy.
Barry, what was the hardest, what would you say was the hardest part of becoming a reformer? What most made you want to quit at various times?
Oh,
how
not
did
being,
you overcome it? I think that that's a help for people to hear about.
Yeah, not being understood. People would say horrible things about me. I know you can't imagine it, Peter, but they really did. And people would say, she's working for the sugar lobby just because she says sugar is better than aspartame. You know, she's paid by the sugar people. I am not paid by anybody. And they just don't get it. They can't understand why somebody would give up money to go out and help people and risk their life doing it. You know, so they're scratching their heads saying, why is she doing what she's doing? There's a hidden reason, you know.
Yeah, attributing bad motives to you has been very hurtful. Is what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. It just almost killed me in the beginning. But I do take some comfort in the fact that the head of PR at the NutraSweet company said, Mary Stoddard, oh, yeah, she's a really nice lady, but so misguided. And a while ago, when I was thinking of Monsanto and Searle, I have often appeared on national and even international radio and television with these people who are debating me from the company. And the doctor from NutraSweet, Dr. Moser, was down here in Dallas on ABC television doing a debate with me one time. And as we were walking into the studio, I said, oh, hi, you're Dr. Moser. I'm Mary Stoddard. He said, I know who you are. And he shook my hand, and I said, how was your trip down here? Don't you love this weather? Texas is so great, and just welcome to the state. And he was looking at me like, this is some kind of idiot. You know, she's just way too happy, and it doesn't realize that I'm here to to just smear her reputation and everything she says and does. But I knew. I know what he's all about, and I want them to know what I'm all about, too. I want them to see into my heart and soul and know that I don't wish people ill. I don't, even my enemies, I don't wish anything bad to happen to them. I just wish it would go away, you know, the sweetener stuff. And I don't know how to do that except through showing people that I love people. And I really do want everybody to have the best life they can have and the best health they can have, and a lot of fun doing it. You know, how can you enjoy life if your brain's all fogged up and if you've got Alzheimer's and hallucinations and suicidal thoughts, which aspartame, I'm here to tell you, can give you. So so many brain functions are tied up with serotonin and the addictive properties of methanol. You know, Peter, I keep thinking about how to describe methanol and how it can mess up your personality. And I explain it this way. I say, remember when you've seen people drunk, you see some people are mean drunks and other people are happy drunks? I said people on aspartame are the same way. Not everybody is mean and unruly and wants to kill people. But yet there are some people out there on it who do, because it's really messed up their brain function and the neurotransmitters in their brain. And I don't know what to do about that.
I love the way you talk about things, you know, thinking about just health in general.
Yeah.
It's been incredibly important for me not to be an angry reformer. You know, I gave that up in my 30s. It just doesn't work for health and happiness. And
again,
giving up wanting to injure folks who are doing harm is, again, not a healthy attitude. And you just described that beautifully.
Oh.
You describe it more heartfelt than I have about, you know, how you have to have a loving attitude toward life. And if you don't,
you
can't do what you and I do without eating yourself up alive.
I absolutely agree. And some days I work on it a little harder than others. But honestly, that's my philosophy, and I'm stuck with it.
Yeah. Golly, how much do you, just thinking again about growing older,
mm-hmm.
Now my parents lived until their 80s and my dad into his 90s, my mom into her 80s, my dad into his early 90s.
Uh-huh.
He was retired. When he reached 65, he was worked for a corporation. He reached 65. He never did a thing again for the rest of his life other than swim a little and play bridge with the ladies, as he put it. And he did that. He did that from 65 until probably close to 90.
Oh my!
And he remained rational and
mm-hmm.
communicative, but he lived a very tiny life during that whole period of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's very hard for me to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly didn't overflow with vitality and energy. I think that's spiritual. I think a lot of that energy we have is spiritual.
I agree. I really do. And it's getting outside yourself and outside your state, outside your country, and thinking about the world in general and what's best for everybody in the world, not just our own little families and our own little communities and that sort of thing. When I was in junior high school, I had a letter published in American Girl magazine, and I thought, this is the big time, you know, at 14 or whatever. And it said, I wanted pen pals from all over the world. Well, let me tell you something. Don't ask for anything you don't really want to get, because I got them. And I think that began my thinking about people in other parts of the world who were just like me. You know, they were 14 years old and had the same concerns and all of that. And that helped me broaden my scope, which I think is one of the reasons I'm able to exist now the way that I do, because I do get outside myself and think about how things are affecting, how GMOs are affecting the rest of the world, how MSG is affecting the whole world that has it in their food supply, how aspartame is going to be detrimental to all the countries and all the children who are using it unwittingly. You know, I gave it to my daughter, and I regret that very much now. But that's one reason I'm out here doing what I do, is so people won't give it to kids. You know, I tell people, this is so much like smoking, except that you don't give cigarettes to kids. And I said, if you think aspartame is great for you, you're not reacting, whatever, knock yourself out. You know, don't let me stop you. But here's the caveat. Do not give it to kids. I said, that's when I'll jump all over you, is when I see you handing kids diet drinks, and when I see prescriptions like antibiotics with aspartame in them. And that's one of the things at the FDA meeting we met, James Turner and I met with these top officials.
Jim Turner.
Yeah, Jim Turner. He's my partner in crime. My good
buddy. He's not young either, if it's the same Jim Turner I'm thinking about, who was writing about psychiatric drugs in the 60s.
Yep. Yeah, he was one of Ralph Nader's raiders.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, listen, you say hello to him from from way back.
Okay, I will. Yeah, he is my hero. I mean, he's the one who mentored me and brought me into this. He didn't have time to do it, because he had a law practice to run, and he said, you do it. You can do it. And so I did. I mean, there were just the very small beginnings of a consumer organization going anyway, aspartame victims and their friends. And the woman who started it left and turned it over to me because she was in a lawsuit with the company. And so she said it wasn't appropriate. So I took it.
As I remember, Mary, excuse me for interrupting, Jim wrote one of the very earliest articles on the risks of tardive dyskinesia, which is the abnormal movement disorder that children and adults get from the antipsychotic drugs.
Could be.
I don't remember how he got interested in it, probably as a lawyer.
Yeah.
But does that sound right to you?
I'm not familiar with that one. I do know that he and John Olney are responsible for getting MSG out of baby food, and he wrote a book on that.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to that, see, I didn't meet him until 1987, when he came down here and went on television with me and said, you know, afterwards, he said, we need you, and we need you to do this and take it, because I was in PR and radio and broadcasting, and he said, we need somebody who is savvy with the media and is one of them, you know, an insider. And so I said, sure, I'll do it. And I admired him so very much, what he had done and is still doing when we asked him to. He and I both did a documentary on French television a couple of years ago about aspartame, and it was wonderful. I mean, it was an hour-long documentary, got rave reviews. They flew me to New York and put me up in the French hotel up there in Manhattan, and we did an all-day shoot, and I came back and talked to the director and producer a little bit later and said, oh, I probably ended up on the cutting room floor. Really, I said, you can be brutally honest. I'm not in it, am I? And they said, oh, you'll be so surprised. It was an hour documentary. My interview was 15 minutes.
Oh, my.
You just don't get that.
No, you don't get
film
that.
And TV.
You don't get that.
And speaking of films, my friend, the late Larry Hagman, I gave him something in the early 90s on aspartame at a fundraiser, a charity event that I went to, and he and his wife were there, and I shook his hand, and I said, I love you on Dallas, and here's something I want you to read in your spare time. Well, he opens his fact sheet up in front of everybody, all these people, and he said, aspartame, that's the sweetener, isn't it? I said, yes, and he said, oh, I want to know more about this. And so I said, well, anytime you want to know, just ask. And so we chatted a little bit about that. I found out from some acting friends that Larry Hagman was going around telling everybody for years that I was the aspartame lady in Dallas that got him off of aspartame. Can
Mary,
you imagine?
We've got about 30 seconds left. Tell us a few brief secrets to life. Until the music starts.
The main thing is eat real food. Don't go to artificial fake food. Go eat real food and cook for yourself. Eat in your home or apartment or residence, whatever. You know, feed your kids real food and reject all this other stuff. Remember, people do gain weight on the artificial sweeteners.
And what about life itself? End with some, tell us a little bit more just about your, well, I think we're getting near the end. So I'm going to say this is an inspiring show. Mary Nash Stoddard, a pleasure to talk to you. I hope that others will take inspiration from what you're doing with your life.
I am so grateful, Peter. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome.